Hey, girlfriends, welcome to another episode of Girlfriends and Goals. We're your hosts, Miosha
and Samaria.
This podcast is a space where we'll talk about friendships, life goals, a little bit of pop culture, and all things womanhood.
Our top goal this year is to grow our podcast audience. So if you're new here or you're an avid listener of this podcast, please subscribe, leave us a 5-star rating, write a review, and be sure to share this episode with a girlfriend or two.
Before we jump into our first segment, I want to take a moment to introduce our special guest for today, Ogechi. Welcome to the Girlfriends and Goals podcast.
Hey, ladies. How are you guys? Happy to be here.
Yay. Yeah. Happy to have you.
Yes, yeah. We're good. And I actually met Ogechi through my husband in the early stages of us dating. So
definitely, yeah.
Maybe like a decade ago, but either way, ever since her and I have been real cool, and I'm just so grateful that you're able to join us for today's episode.
Yeah, I remember there was a time where I was talking to your husband, and then we started talking, and then I think I called on his name, and he said he's been gone for like 10 or 15 minutes, so we developed a friendship that way.
Yeah.
So, awesome.
Yeah. So let's get into our first segment, which is Girl, What's Good, where we talk about something we've been loving for the past couple of weeks. It could be a book, a podcast, store, bottle of wine, anything that's been good with you. So since we have a special guest, Ogechi, tell us what's been good, girl.
Okay. So I have a new show I'm into on Netflix, Grace okay. and Frankie. I'm late to the game. If y'all have been watching it, I'm sorry. But you know how Netflix has the top 10? And mm-hmm. I kept seeing it. And I was like, well, maybe there's something here that I should check out. And when I started, the first episode got me, even the little intro about the story. You guys watched the show, I assume?
So I've seen... Okay. I think it was the first season.
First season. Okay. I'm on first season right now. And what I love about it, it has this Golden Girls vibe where, you know, people in their 70s, 80s, and the life that they've lived and, you know, telling their story through comedy. And so that's what it reminded me of. And so I'm loving it every episode. So that's what's up with me.
Okay. Okay. Yeah.
I like it. It is a humorous show. And like you said, Golden Girls-ish type of vibe.
Yeah.
Very nice. I guess I'll go next because mine is also a Netflix show.
Okay.
Yeah. It's called Savage Beauty. And they only have one season. So if you're a person who needs 2-3 seasons so you can fully binge, then maybe wait for the next season, which hopefully they'll have. But it's actually an African show that's on the US Netflix, and it is so good. It's like drama, mystery, crime, all of that, and that's like right up my alley. So yeah, Savage Beauty.
Okay, we'll have to check that out. Well, I guess today the theme is digital content because I have another show too.
Okay.
But mine is called Gracie's Corner, and it's a YouTube channel / show that's geared for babies, toddlers, children. What I love about the channel is that it showcases a Black family. And it showcases a Black family, and they have their own unique take on just traditional nursery rhymes. And yes, the Cocoa Melons and the Little Baby Bums of the world, like those are all great. But for me, it was important to have a cartoon or show, learning show for my child that has representation of a family that looks like his. So if you have small children and you're looking for that type of content, I highly recommend it. The beats do go hard, which if you have a small child, you know, listening to these nursery rhymes back to back can drive you a little bit crazy, but Gracie's Corner, they have a great take on it. So yeah, we'll have all of the shows and the content that we mentioned listed in the show notes.
All right, cool. So I guess we'll go ahead and get into today's topic,
which is life after divorce and the things I wish I knew before I got married. And on this podcast, we've had a few episodes on marriage. The first one, I believe, was getting married late. And then we had another one that was getting married too young. So we wanted to add to our previous discussions on marriage and have a conversation on when it doesn't progress the way that you envision and comes to an end. I guess I'll start by asking you, Ogechi, before you got married, or even in the early days of your marriage, did you have any preconceived thoughts on people who ended up divorced?
Yeah, great question. And maybe before I even answer that question, I want to say that just even doing this platform has been the first time I've publicly shared about my experience going through this process. So thank you for the opportunity. I hope that it helps somebody in their journey and their process, or they can help somebody else going through, you know, some of the things that I experienced. So definitely, it's almost like you guys have the first exclusive to my story, like celebrity. So, so your question was, did I have any preconceived notions about those that have been divorced? No, not really. I wasn't around a lot of people that had been divorced. There weren't a lot of people that were divorced in my family, immediate and extended. And even if I did know somebody, like it was just a data point. I didn't see their process in front of me, you know, how they went through their trauma and things like that. So I didn't really think anything of divorced people. That's just the reality. And so it's not until I went through my journey that, I understand, what people would have gone through. So.
Cool. So speaking of your journey, can you share with us just a little bit about your marriage story? Like, how old were you, or what stage of life were you in? And were you feeling any outside pressures to get married?
Sure. I was 27 when I got married. I was about 4 years or so out of college. Mm-hmm. I wouldn't say I felt any pressure to get married. In fact, I believe among my friend groups, I was one of the earliest to get married. Right. So I didn't have a lot of people doing the same, journey, towards marriage or discussing like our significant others and things like that. What else was going on? I mean, I had dated people in the past, of course, and those didn't work out. And maybe right before even meeting my ex, there was a time where I did some self-reflection on, what's going on. And right at that moment, I thought that kind of my prayers had been answered in a way. And seeing that in my ex from the kinds of people that I used to be with in the past, but little did I know that, he would just be another person, that would cause hurt or, and pain and things like that. So that's kind of where I was. As I think about it, I was definitely, I was in Houston. I was active, was going to a lot of professional groups and things like that and hanging out. And so I was out there, I was living life, young mid to late 20s. So that's why I didn't feel any pressure.
Okay. So once you got married, did you have in your mind that divorce wasn't an option? And I'm asking because I know I've heard, even before I got married, a lot of people or couples say like divorce is not an option. It's not even a word that we mention in our home. And I like to believe that they usually say that just to really stay focused on the task and obviously staying motivated, not wanting to speak negativity into their marriage, maybe for cultural reasons, they don't believe in divorce. But I'm curious, in your situation, did you go into it thinking like, okay, well, if it just doesn't work out, then that's an option?
No, never. And in fact, we we both said that, and culturally that's what we were taught as well, from our faith backgrounds, from culture backgrounds. Even if it wasn't going to be Disney and roses and things like that, kind of prepared to stay in that, you know, even if it wasn't going to be that ultimately, if that makes sense. Mm-hmm. So divorce was never an option. In fact, yeah, we would say that, we'd affirm ourselves in our relationship to say things like that. And to be honest, when we physically separated, it still wasn't even an option in my mind. Because I'm thinking that there was going to be a period of reconciliation, that, oh, okay, well, you know, we're really at the crossroads, but there is still hope. There's still a point where this could take a turn for the better. We definitely didn't entertain those ideas going into the marriage at the beginning. And it was not even something discussed, like when we physically split, you know, ways, mm-hmm. or parted. It came after, just as a result of, this isn't going anywhere. Nobody's making moves to reconcile. And so it was just its natural end. So hopefully that makes sense.
Mm-hmm. No, it definitely does. And maybe in those instances, I mean, you can let me know, but you might feel like, okay, I did do everything. Like, I wasn't throwing in the towel before necessary, like we tried. So I don't know, did you feel any sense of, okay, well, at least leaving this, I know I did everything I could have done? Or were you like, oh, there's more that I can do? What was your feeling around that?
Sure. So there's two points where I really felt like I don't know what to do, how to continue on. Mm-hmm. And, you know, in my mind, I was like, maybe this is it. But there was a whisper to say, hey, let's go get some outside counseling from someone that isn't necessarily tied to our community, tied to our church, tied to anything that we are both familiar with, so that it can be neutral, unbiased, and we can both get the help that we need together. So when I did that, I sought out the counselor, and now it's time for the counselor to reach out to him, and he wasn't interested. And so that's where I said, okay, I was at my lowest, and then I still tried something else, you know, and then to be rejected in that way was also another hurtful thing. And so, but that wasn't even, we didn't even discuss divorce at that point. You know what I'm saying? So I was still prepared to push through and maybe get out of this funk, I would say. And the period where it was the ultimate decision was maybe 4 or 5 months after we had physically separated. And one of my family members had reached out to say, hey, maybe I could, you know, get us talking again and things like that. And they rejected that family member as well. And there was no communication between us. He was sending really hateful text messages and calling my job and things that were just really unnecessary during that phase. Mm-hmm. And because there was physical separation, because I didn't really see any effort on his part, and it had been 4 to 5 months since the physical separation, it's at that point where I said, you know what, I don't know if I want to be legally tied to someone that doesn't have a vested interest in me, doesn't care what's going on, could get a bank or credit card in my name. You know, I didn't know. I just had all these thoughts. And that's why I took the legal steps at that point. But, you know, at that point, he wasn't even in front of me. You know what I'm saying? So it kind of happened about 2 times where I thought, man, this is it. You know, so.
Yeah, because under those circumstances, it's almost like you're having to guess, okay, would this person be okay with continuing this dynamic between us? Like, I know back in the day, we've heard of people like getting divorced, not on paper, but they're not together. And exactly. It's like 20, 30 years have passed.
Exactly. Exactly. And
you find out when they pass, like, oh, wait, so-and-so was still married.
Yeah. So-and-so. Yeah. Exactly. Exactly.
Yeah.
And so,
yeah. Good for you, child. I love it. No, not the hope, but like just that you made a very like smart decision, you know, definitely support that. So we've heard of people who are like, you know, like throwing parties or going on big vacations or just happy for it to be over after divorce. What was that time like for you after everything was finalized?
The whole process for me took about a year and a half. Okay. And a year and a half is unlikely for somebody that didn't have kids and didn't have property together. It should have gone much faster. So there were more issues coming from his side in the matter. Mm-hmm. So when it did end, I was happy for the process to be over, but not in the way that's glamorized, you know, in media and things like that, because divorce is a death. It's a spiritual mm-hmm. death, a covenantal death, a physical death in a way, where, you know, two people that had, you know, were coming together and no longer together. So I didn't celebrate anything. I mean, I was living life. I had a, you know, I was in mourning. So, and there were times where I wouldn't even know what the trigger was. You know, I could be driving, I could see a car that resembled his car, and I'd start, you know, bawling. And so definitely, yeah, not happy. divorce shouldn't be glamorized, but I can understand people's reasons for doing the things that they do in that way. But that wasn't my case for sure.
Yeah. So you mentioned earlier that between your family and your close friendship circle, that there really weren't people around you or close to you that had gone through divorce. Yeah. And so as you were going through this process, I guess, what did the support look like for you? And do you wish that, you know, family or friends may have done things a little bit different to help you get through this process?
Yeah, I actually had a friend going through, when we happened to get to that point, we were kind of going through the same thing. So we supported each other through the process in terms of, oh, he said this, don't let it get you, you know,
yeah,
riled up and things like that. So some of that emotional support was there. I definitely had support from friends whenever a trigger would occur and it doesn't make any sense, right? But they understand that I just need love in this time. You know, there are some people that I, you could say I was disappointed with how it happened, or their response towards me, their response towards him, and things like that, where I would have liked to see more affection and love come towards my side. There are people that knew me longer than they knew him and would start believing things that were slanderous remarks towards me. And I'm like, you guys just met him, you know, kind of thing. And so you could say I was disappointed in those that were of the community in that manner. Definitely disappointed in those that came after the fact and wanted to make a comment about the situation, you know, and say, oh, I knew this and this and this. And I'm like, well, thanks, you know, after the fact. not helpful, and we'll never be helpful. Don't ever say that to anybody else again, you know, to come after the fact and, you know, give this story or that story. But those during this time, it also helped me to understand who my community was. I think growing up, we always assume that it's going to be your family, it's going to be your close friends, and that is true. But even in family, you could still say, okay, I'm going to bring y'all a little bit closer and you're just going to stay right here. You know what I mean? And so really understanding what my community was during that time. And some people, if they fell off, they fell off. If they came closer, they came closer. So I would say, yeah, I had disappointments, but I did also have help through that process, especially also with my faith and what keeps me grounded in having a community in that way.
I'm curious to hear, did you feel, I guess, like while you all were going through the process, any pressure to like hide the fact that you were going through this, or kind of be mindful of who you were sharing this journey with, or maybe just at different points and times? Because like I've heard where even with family, like they kind of expect like, oh, you should keep me in the know of all the things that are going on with you. But I'd imagine, you know, when it's something sensitive and as serious as this, that you may like pick and choose like when certain people are let into kind of what's going on, because you're right. People do become very vocal on things, you know, especially stuff like this, where it's really like, just give your support and leave it at that, or don't say anything at all.
Right. Yes. I definitely had to start making some decisions. There was a point where I may have given all of myself to people and shared, and because life was great and things were happening. But then this is something that was very traumatic experience in my life. And I've never been through this before. So I didn't know, I don't have all the rules and how to do things. I just know what to do day by day as time is going. So there were people that I actually had to tell them, hey, I don't wish to discuss this with you, but we can talk about anything else. And then even in that, because sometimes there is an expectation people have, like they were working with a certain Ogechi, and then now got to switch it up to protect myself and guard my heart and things like that. And so they didn't like that, you know, and it was like, well, I don't care what you like, because I'm trying to not fall under the water. I'm not trying not to drown, you know? Mm-hmm. So there were people where I had to like switch up how we need to relate to one another. And I think that's okay. When you just have to do what you need to do. Even in family, there was a time I told all of my family members, well, I don't want to discuss this right now, because in that 4 to 5 months of the, you know, after we physically separated, I made a conscious decision to not discuss it. You know, people were calling me like, let's do this and let's do that. And imagine talking about this terrible situation every single day, right? I don't want to do that. So I said, you know, I don't want to talk about it. And so, yes, and you have to, because you're also at a time where you just placed a lot of trust in somebody, and now you're like questioning everybody, to be honest, not even just him. You're just questioning like, are you for me? Are you with me? I don't know. So yeah, that definitely I had to redefine some boundaries during that time.
Yeah. I love how you talk about setting the boundaries with family. Cause I know like with my mom, sometimes I'm like, hey, I don't really want to talk about this right now. And she'll keep talking about it. And I'm like, I think I've just realized, okay, let her talk about it. Mm-hmm. You don't say anything, but like, she's just not gonna, if she wants to talk about it, she's gonna talk about it, but I don't have to engage with her. But I was just wondering, culturally, like how big of a role did culture play during this process of your divorce? Mm-hmm. I remember, and this is a terrible thing, but I remember being very young and being privy to a couple that was going through a divorce or about to file for a divorce or something like that. And someone made the comment of, oh, well, women are the ones who keep the houses together, or women are the ones who keep the marriage together. And I just wonder, like, were there any things that culturally affected you during this time, or any, I don't want to say kind of any toxic like mindsets that are very prevalent in the African culture that kind of impacted you during this time?
For sure. And I love that question, because it was very prominent in reflecting in this whole process. There's, in relation to the saying that you just said, right? There's another saying that women should bear their cross, you know, that all of the things that were happening to me, I should take it and I should deal with it. And because they're dealing with it, you know, our aunties and uncle, they're dealing with that. You know, Mimi, you talked about people physically separated, but they're still married. That's how they dealt with that. They didn't want to experience the reality that you're not divorced, but they are culturally trying to keep it together, you know, in front of everybody, by not going that extra step. But it's like, Auntie, you divorced. you ain't seen your husband in 20 years. Yeah.
But you know what be killing me? Those be the main ones asking the younger women, where's your husband?
Exactly.
Where's yours?
Exactly. And they're the main ones coming to me asking me, you know, because I was involved in my community. It was like at the peak in terms of my in and out and things like that. I was very involved. And so African community, you come by yourself and you're married, where's your husband, right? Mm-hmm. And so that, I would say just that alone made me take moves to step back from it, because I didn't want to get that question, you know, just right there. Mm-hmm. And then two, the part about bearing your cross, it was like, it had no hope in that phrase, you know, it's hopeless, to be honest. And it has this pseudo Christian spin on it, but it's not even, to me, Christian, you know, from what I know right now, because they misunderstand to what it means to bear your cross and things like that. But for sure, culture, it made me take a step back to see was I moving because culture said so? Mm-hmm. You know, I'll just say that my ex was of the culture, you know, he was from my place. We spoke the same language and everything like that. We were of the same culture. And so when you're of the same culture, then they feel like they have a right to your information and your marriage and what's going on in the house. And culture says that as old as I am in my mid-30s, that I'm still a kid. And so I still got to, you know, tell them what's going on, or, you know, however they talk to me. So definitely, culture played a big part in just my thinking and my reasoning back then. And so now I love culture still, but I don't let it lead in the process of marriage. I don't let it think for me. Just because it's tradition don't mean it's right, you know? Mm-hmm. And you respect tradition where it fits, but you also do what you need to do for yourself as well.
Yes. So after going through this process, has it changed how you view marriage going forward? Like, I know I've seen some people where they're like, I'm never getting married again. Some people, they like rush into another marriage, and some people are indifferent. They're like, you know what, if it happens, if not, I'm glad I've experienced it. Mm-hmm. And they're kind of, I guess, content with being where they are.
Right. I still look forward to marriage. If anything, this process has taught me to take time in looking for my spouse. Not to say that I didn't take time before, but also just take more time, you know, and what is it that I'm looking for in a potential mate? I would raise my hand and say that, yeah, I was not well equipped or had enough wisdom at that time to, I mean, I thought for myself, but again, like, I still had some cultural elements, you know, where I was reasoning in a way that today I wouldn't reason in the same way. So I'm definitely not bitter throughout this process. And that's because I worked on healing, you know. Mm-hmm. So if I didn't do that work, then, you know, anybody could have any outlook on marriage. But I think if you do the work, then hopefully you'll understand that it can't be worse than that. You just have to look forward to the good that's coming.
So just because you said, like, there was a wisdom thing where you feel like you have some wisdom now that maybe you didn't have then, I do want to ask, like, looking back, is there anything that you wish you had done differently?
So back to the community and peace, again with the boundaries, where I wish that I did bring in the right people, like the right healthy community around me when I was dating in that time, so that Because I think I had an attitude that was, I don't want anybody in my business, you know, and I'm just gonna do me. And so I didn't really let a lot of people in that phase that was very crucial before accepting a ring, you know. So I think I would have done something like that where I could find trustworthy people that they're not here to gossip or tell your business or things like that, but they're here to pour into you and invest and want to see you succeed in your relationship and be, you know, honest with you to tell you, hey, this is not it. Even if you're engaged, you know, even if you're walking down the altar, it doesn't matter. It's never too late, you know, before making a wrong decision. So I wish I would have done that a little bit more, just reflecting back. And that's something that as I'm dating now that I'm really investing in, like being surrounded by people that want to see me win and want to see me do well in this space.
Is there anything that you found helpful through this journey that you think would be of use for others who are either currently going through a divorce or recently divorced?
Sure. I believe, and I never saw an opportunity to need counseling in my life until I needed it. Mm-hmm. And although that counseling was intended for it to be us two, right? But he rejected it. I ended up staying with her for 6 months to work on myself. And that was great because I wasn't going out. I wasn't going to church. I had stepped back from a lot of things that I used to do just because I just wasn't sure, you know. But I would encourage anybody that is going through this process to seek counseling, to heal in those areas that need healing. And it may not have even stemmed from that relationship. It could be things before that, you know. So I would advocate for counseling, if not for the both of you, for yourself especially, so you can be a whole person before going into another relationship. You know, you don't want to be a fraction of a person, because the chances of success are unlikely in that case as well. So that's what I would encourage. And I would also encourage those like myself that have gone through the process to really stay close and be that community for other friends and other, you know, girlfriends and things like that. These days, if I hear somebody is talking, you know, I'm not trying to be nosy or get in your business. I just want to make sure that you are having the right conversations, you're looking at the right things, that romance is not too in your eyes to not see what should be clear in front of your face, you know. So I try to be that friend that wants to speak up and just to motivate and encourage and to share my process. I think we hide and, you know, I mean, there's a period for that because I still gotta heal. But when you feel comfortable to come out and to share your story, please help somebody with your story, so that they can learn, they can grow from that.
Yeah. Just one more quick question, because you talked about like the effectiveness of counseling. Mm-hmm. And I know that a lot of couples who are engaged go to premarital counseling. Recently, I've heard of people getting pre-engagement counseling. Is there anything that you feel like absolutely needs to be covered in those sessions before an engagement or before a marriage that would be really helpful?
I mean, maybe finances, because that always seems to be the sticker. But I would say, without putting a label to anything, understand if your core values align, like work that out through your counseling sessions. And that is specific to each individual. That's where problems start, is when somebody's core values is causing friction on somebody else's, right? And so it just falls down from there. So I like those things, premarital counseling and whatever it takes to get you to the altar in a way that I'm sure of this person, right? But I would say make sure your core values are aligned And I mean, anybody can start off like we did saying, oh, we're not going to divorce. Sure. Nobody wants to get a divorce. Nobody goes into getting a divorce, but there's things that, I did this Bible study plan not too long ago about weeds. You know, you want to make sure that you address your weeds in your field. And anytime it springs up, don't ignore it. Mm-hmm. Like, is this true? You know, is this solvable or anything like that? So, that's what I would also encourage.
So what was one positive thing that you've learned from this experience? I mean, obviously it's traumatic. Like you said, it's like a death. And, you know, when you're getting married, there's so much support there. You know, everyone's so excited and wants to be in the room. I was at Ogeji's wedding.
Yeah, she was.
And it was big and lit. I'll say that. Yeah. But what's one positive thing that you feel like has come from this?
I'll give you two. So the first is definitely when you know that I'm definitely a better person than who I was before, that's always a positive thing, right? And then the second is that I can love again, you know, that I didn't come out with bitterness. And, you know, as you were saying, that people do not look forward to the unknown again of marriage and if they're going to get the same, you know, spouse and things like that. So I think I'm truly grateful that I do have a heart that desires marriage still in the proper, healthy way. I also have a community now that's like, man, if anybody tries anything next time, you know, they're going to have to answer to us, right? And before my dad or my mom, you know, and so I love that through this journey, I did see those that were really in my corner and that I don't have a heart of bitterness.
Yes, I love that. Well, thank you so much for coming on and just like sharing your wisdom around this topic. We really appreciate having you. And to our audience, thank you guys so much for tuning into this episode of the Girlfriends and Goals podcast. Make sure you follow us on Instagram at Girlfriends and Goals podcast, where we'll continue this conversation over the next week. If you haven't subscribed already, please go ahead and do that now. And don't forget to rate, review, and share. Until next time. Bye.
Bye.